Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we are bringing back Bob Weiss. He came on a few weeks ago and we uploaded it to YouTube and we talked a little bit about the Russian hacking situation. And it was amazing, the comments that he got. So I want to bring him back to defend himself a little bit. And then we're going to get into the relationship with FBI and Best Buy, the Geek Squad, and some other really interesting things that have to do with cybersecurity and all the nefarious activities that are going on out there. So let's get right into that interview now with Bob Weiss.
Hi, Bob. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Happy to be here, of course.
Well, I had to bring you back. We talked about the hacking with Russia last week, maybe a week and a half ago, and it's a very sensitive subject, and we got all sorts of comments on all sides. And even Snowden, I just listened to him give a talk the other day, and he pretty much said the same thing as you. Did Russia do it? He goes, I'd be surprised if every state out there with this capability isn't hacking into our systems. It's just what they're doing.
yeah, of course. You know, and we are too. And there was, of course, this beautiful article in Pioneer Press on Sunday. I don't know if you caught it, but they went on and on about the Russian hacking and what have you. And it kind of boiled down to, who you're going to believe. Because the FBI and CIA and intelligence services are pretty much saying, yeah, it happened. And Obama, even in the last days of his presidency, even took a look at planting cyber war or cyber event. Let's call it a cyber event. Cyber war sounds so grim. But cyber event capability on the Russian infrastructure, and evidently that was ongoing at the time of the inauguration. And of course, the question is this something that Trump continued to work on? Is it something that he's abandoning? Just how close is the new president with Russia as compared to the old, to the old regime. So it's, it's interesting. I think that there's a really, really good possibility that the Russian hack may have been, I won't say completely fabricated, but let's say that it may have been made bigger than it was.
It may be
that we're not hearing half of it either, so it's tough to know, but the fact that we expelled 35 Russian diplomats again in the waning days of the Obama administration, I mean, that's not something that's done trivially, you need to know that. You need to know that the other side knows that the getting expelled was justified. And of course, the Russians are all deny, and then
Of course they're going to deny. We would deny too if we were.
Absolutely.
If we are.
Yeah. Well, there was the whole spying on Angela Merkel thing that's probably about 2-3 years old. When some of the early Snowden stuff came out and it was, apparent that we were spying on our NATO allies. Hey, wait a minute.
But it's a different question on whether it affected the election or not. I mean, whether they're going into our systems and stuff all the time, we know they are. I mean, there's a big report. We did a whole bunch of stuff way before the election that all of this is going on. The question is whether it affected our election or not. And they're saying they don't think so, but
I don't know that it affected vote totals in the sense that they were altered or messed with or changed or that somebody got into the actual voting infrastructure and was able to manipulate totals. But I think in the final days of the campaign, Did it have an influence? Could have been. Could have been that they, you know, that, I mean, this was as much a propaganda campaign by the Russians as it was a technical hack. It was about changing opinions and, you know, moving minds and.
And but everybody does that, right? We
Yep,
do that in
absolutely.
every
Sure.
country. Everybody's doing that. They're planting stories, they're doing all this
Yeah,
stuff.
yeah.
And it, to me, it seems like even if they did do it to a certain extent, other countries are doing it too. We're doing it all over the place. And
Everybody's doing it
it
to
seems like an
everybody, and
excuse. It just seemed like an excuse because it was like, well, you knew that all this was going on. We knew, we've known it for 10 years. And so now it's a convenient excuse because it wasn't the result you wanted. That's how it felt to me. But, you know, hey, maybe it was affected more than we realized, but that just means we need to clean up our system. And we were sitting there with this knowing this could happen for years.
Well, and you know, to the Hillary defenders who are saying that the election was stolen, let us remember that in 2008, she had a shot at being the Democratic candidate, and it went to Barack Obama. I mean, her own party turned her down the first time. So there's a lot of people out there that just are not Hillary people, and some of them are in her party. So
Yeah, I just
just
wish
saying.
it would have been nice to have a female candidate that was a little more palatable,
Yeah,
you know.
exactly. Exactly. I mean, what we've had so far is Hillary and Sarah Palin. And, you know, I, you know, personally, you know, it was a hot for teacher moment for me, but, you know, I
Oh,
mean,
for God's sake. Jeez.
but she was a little bit of a dingbat. I mean, you know, so it's kind of like, yeah, if women want to run, they need to put better
Well, there's a
representation.
lot of really great women, but we got to get them out there, you know, and right now we just
There were some in the last
I
camp. I mean,
don't
Meg Whitman involved in it. If it wasn't this campaign, it was the one before that. And you know, I mean, here we have some, you know, Silicon Valley CEO type. You know, they just never get any traction. So
Yeah, I don't
I don't
know.
know.
So maybe that, hopefully that will change, and we do need to mix it up a little bit. But
It
let's.
does say something interesting about the United States that we're willing to elect a black man before a white woman. I mean, that says something. It does. It
Yeah.
doesn't, it's, they ain't pretty.
Well, you know, when it comes to how we feel about women, I think it's great that we were able to elect a black man. I think it's great we can elect anybody and look past all that crap, right? Because it's all superficial stuff, and it would be great if we could look past all of that and get to a higher level of consciousness and just look for people that are good at what they do. But I want to dive into some of the stuff that you're an expert at, and there is an FBI relationship with the Geek Squad, and
Yeah,
it's
that's
creating a lot of
fascinating.
controversy. Can you talk about what that relationship is?
Yeah, so there's a repair facility in Kentucky. And if you bring your computer into the Geek Squad and they can't fix it on the spot, that's where it goes. It goes off to one of these repair centers. And evidently, the FBI had recruited some paid informants who were on the payroll of Geek Squad. So now I have two jobs. I'm a Geek Squad tech, and the FBI's paying me on the side, you know, keep my eyes open for primarily for child pornography. And you know, hey, who could possibly come down in favor of, you know, oh, let's let these poor child pornographers go, you know, oh, no, I mean, we all want to burn them in the public square, you know, that's cool. Well, maybe
I
not
want to burn them
in
faster in the
public,
public
but
square, being
yeah.
honest. I want it coming quicker, but yes.
But, you know, the issue comes down to the reason they're doing this is that the FBI can't do this directly without a warrant. But a private citizen, as a private citizen, you know, not only can you report this, but you're people in IT, people in technology, people like myself, if I come across that kind of imagery on a computer, I'm obliged under law to report it, to drop everything, to touch nothing, and to call the police and the FBI and report it. And so they're basically cultivating this relationship and taking it from the realm of concerned citizen, you know, doing their duty to we paid you and we just want you to, you know, we want you to look. We want you to intentionally look for this kind of data, and when you find it, let us know. And so it comes really, really close to stepping on the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, illegal search and seizure. And, you know, the question is, because these techs are being paid, does this now make them law enforcement agents of the law and bound under that, you know, under the Fourth Amendment and the subsequent case law around getting warrants and that sort of thing? Or does it fall under the, you know, concerned citizen has to turn in kind of a thing? And the early results from the particular case of one guy who's being charged with pornography, the judge has not come down favorably on the side of the FBI in this particular case. And then, of course, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is a watchdog, nonprofit watchdog organization that is invested in keeping the internet free and open and secure. And, you know, they're bringing a suit to basically test the constitutionality of this type of a relationship. And so it's just kind of interesting where it's going. I don't have, you know, like all this slippery slope stuff where it's, you know, law enforcement complains that they need sneaky backdoors in order to break encryption because bad guys are using encryption and now we can't catch them anymore. But the problem with sneaky backdoors is that, you know, there's no way to keep them secure. They'll eventually get released like everything else does. And now all of a sudden all encryption is open to every crook on the planet. And then the other thing is that, well, we're just looking for this data, but that's today. Today they're looking for child
See,
porn.
No, that's the problem.
We're all using the same thing to look for terrorist stuff. Well, hey, terrorists, well, who's not in favor of catching a few of those guys? Well, now all of a sudden they're using it to look for, shall we say, political dissidents that were native born to this country, people like, you know, like the
can't they pass a law and say okay, we can't do search and seizure, but we can if we're looking for pedophilia or if we're looking for specific things? Because then that would just clean it up and say, okay, we're not, you know, we're still maintaining the rights of the Constitution. But pedophilia is so bad, it's so out of control we, and the internet is allowing it to explode, that in order to take, and so, okay, well, let's change the laws and say, okay, we're going to create a clause that pedophilia is one of those items that we can go in and look, and but we can't do anything else, because then now you're crossing a whole bunch of lines. I mean, we have to protect our freedoms, but hey, pedophilia is destroying our country. You know, I mean, our children being abused is not okay.
The thing is that there are so many reasonably decent legal ways to catch these guys. This is, just seems a little bit like one step too far to me. But for instance, okay, I mean, this is the way it worked, you know, back when illegal music downloads was a huge big deal, back before before Apple created the 99-cent song and basically ended pretty much for all time the need to download illegal tracks, because all of a sudden I can just buy a track for $1. And who's not going to do that, you know? So anyway, but back in the day, the music industry would salt the downloader sites with tracks that had a tracking software attached to them. And so if you downloaded that song, they knew who you were and they knew your IP address and they knew where you were. And if you shared that song, that broke the law. And then they were able to find you and basically bring suit. The FBI can and does do the same thing with pornographic images. There are images that, you know, are put out on the boards that are basically bait. And they have, you know, I mean, there's so many cool things you can do with an image in terms of embedding other content that isn't visible and that you can only find if you know what the file size was of the original, which you're not going to know. And so, you know, they're doing that. This is just one more thing. This is somebody going, hey, as long as we're at it, you know. And I'm sure it was kind of a deal where, so there's a collaboration between the FBI and business in the cybersecurity world called, what the heck do they call it? InfraGuard. So we have an InfraGuard organization in the Twin Cities. I've gone to a few meetings and there's FBI agents there. And then there's people from the security world there. Well, nothing would prevent somebody in, you know, there got to be a Kentucky branch of InfraGuard. And so, you know, these Best Buy employees are hanging out at InfraGuard and they meet a couple FBI agents. And then there's a little conversation about, hey, how'd you like to work, you know, do a little work for us and get paid? And it's like, I'm sorry, but who wouldn't say yes to that? Cool. I'm going to work for the FBI. I'm going to be paid. This is like, you know, almost as good as getting a badge. And of course, they're members of the Geek Squad. So they have a badge. You know, they have a Geek Squad badge. So they're already less kind of like, you know, mentally.
They're cool in their own little world.
Yeah. It's like I'm the king of the nerds because I'm working for the FBI, you know, and it's like, you know, I mean, seriously, if the FBI approached me with a similar offer, I'd think about it. I mean, I really would.
Well,
and I'd accept it. It would depend a little bit on the case. I'm pretty strongly pro-constitutional and a libertarian, which means I'm not going to be their first choice because I'm already, you know, my suspicion is that the government's up to something and it may not be good. You know, that's my whole presumption going forward. And so that makes me not maybe an ideal candidate.
So what are people worried about that the FBI is going to do with this? Because, you know, when you hear pedophilia, you hear terrorism, it's like, oh, good, go in there.
Everybody's
but where
that.
Does that, you know, it's like the whole Snowden revelation where NSA is spying on everything.
Yeah,
like
where
is it that it crosses the line? And next thing you know, we have absolutely no privacy. Yeah, and is this know, what I mean, the court is saying is all you have to do is, this is the line that's being crossed because now you're open to everything. It's hard because these are the hard issues. It's like, what's mm-hmm. pedophilia? Of course, go after them. But yeah. Wait a minute. Now, what are we giving away with freedoms?
Yeah. And, you know, this is kind of the thing where it's sort of like somebody decides that we need to kill all the sharks. And so it's like, okay, cool. You know, sharks, they just eat surfers. So that's good. We could kill all the sharks. But they do it by filling the ocean with trawlers and scooping up every fish they can find and then killing the sharks and putting the fish back. But of course, certain number of fish that aren't sharks die in the process just from being caught. And this is in essence the same kind of thing that happens when law enforcement gets too many gimmies. You know, it's kind of like, well, today I'm looking for terrorists and tomorrow I'm spying on my ex. And there are cases like that, you know, that come up and have been in the paper and what have you, where the police use their investigative tools and powers for things that quite strictly speaking are personal and illegal. And, but it also comes down to, you know, in the history of the political systems of people, you have regimes like, say, the Nazis in World War II, where it all started out pretty cool, and we got Germany back on its feet, and we ended the recession and the hyperinflation, and we built the military, And we march around in cool outfits, and we built superhighway system before people even knew what that was. And then we invaded Czechoslovakia. Oops, didn't mean to. Well, these people are German, they don't mind. And then we, you know, and then it's, you know, and then before you know it, they're rounding up people who don't fit the Aryan ideal and shipping them off to be, you know, to become slaves or killed. And I'm not saying that's going to happen in the United States, but, you know, if you don't draw the line somewhere and say, this is it, this is the line, then eventually you get there, whether it's slow or fast, you get there. And that's why we have a constitution and a bill of rights in the first place, is that the people who created the United States, who fought for liberation from England, were very much aware that it could become just as bad as it was under the king if they didn't take measures to prevent it in the first place. And that's where the Constitution and then the Bill of Rights came from, was, you know, guys who were more motivated by an ideal than by their own self-interest. So, you know, and so there need to be a few of us who are willing to defend the strict interpretation of those, of the Constitution and Bill of Rights. And I guess I got to throw my hat in that ring. So,
well, the Electronic Frontier Foundation launched a legal action in this whole case. Can you tell us about that situation and where is it at? You're saying that the judge is leaning more on the side of...
Well, actually, the EFF, I don't think the EFF has actually gotten into court yet. They've just simply filed. The case that that I'm looking at is the one, I believe it's in California, that is actually, who the heck do I have this? Yeah, Mark Rentenmeyer is a guy who's been accused of possessing and evidently sharing pornographic images of children. And his attorney is basically trying to get all the evidence thrown out because it was acquired by these Geek Squad employees. And, you know, his attorney is basically saying this is a clear violation of Fourth Amendment and this evidence should be excluded. What else have you got? And I'm not looking for that case necessarily to go in favor of the defendant. But it could. And that may be the real issue with the FBI Geek Squad relationship, is that now they've screwed up a bunch of cases by muddying the waters. You know, and it's kind of like, who do we hold accountable for that? And, you know, maybe we got to chalk it up to seemed like a good idea at the time, but didn't turn out so good. Kind of, I mean, who doesn't have those? I have those all the time. But when it impacts a case where you're desperately trying to get some creepy guy off the street, well, that's unfortunate. You know, that's, and, you know, it's not like the guys in the FBI don't know the rules and where the boundaries are. This whoever set this little sting up was moving the rope a little bit. They were moving the line and saying, we should be able to get away with this because, you know, these people are not law enforcement. They're just guys.
Well, I can understand where you get to a point where when you're trying to take out really bad guys like pornographers, you're like, I don't care. I just want to get rid of them.
Yeah.
But this is what makes everything so difficult, is how do you protect your freedoms on those kind of cases? These are the hard ethics and the hard lines that make all this stuff difficult.
Well, so. And I've said for years, you know, and like the Patriot Act, you know, a couple 20 guys blew up two skyscrapers and four airplanes and the Pentagon. And then we wrote all kinds of laws that allowed law enforcement to take an easier look for this kind of stuff to happen again. All seemed like a really great idea. The thing that I'm that I tell people who want to hear it, and even those who don't want to hear it and aren't hearing it, is that if you want to live in a free society, it's an inherently much more dangerous society, because freedom brings risks with it that you don't have in a really nice, tightly controlled state like Malaysia, for crying out loud. I mean, can't spit on the sidewalk, can't leave gum, you know. I mean, young American tourists have been arrested for jaywalking and thrown and then beaten with a stick or whatever kind of crazy crap they got over there. But it's a very clean society with very little law breaking. Why? Because people are terrified. But, you know, hey, it's a really great place to visit, but God, don't spit your gum on the sidewalk, please.
Well, I mean, that's the problem. Eventually, when you do too much of those rules, the state becomes this all powerful. And you lose what you originally intended for it to all make your life better. There becomes a dictator. Instead of everyone having freedom and everybody living in harmony, now there becomes this all-powerful state that starts to do fascist activities it's the natural evolution of all that.
But for the vast majority of everyday people, countries like that are actually easier than countries like ours. Our country is like, you know, it's chaotic. It's chaotic. It's disorganized. It's hard to get things done. It's, you know, but at the same time, you know, we can stand in a public square and complain about it. We can write.
I can argue, and I'm going to interrupt you. Sorry about that. But I can argue it's easier to get things done, because when the state things are centrally controlled, a lot of times it becomes really bogged down, you know, like a bureaucracy kind of things. But when you have a free market where everybody's competing, you know, like I've gone to other countries where they don't have the kind of competition that we have, it's awful to get basic things done. So yeah. I think it depends, but I agree with you that we're more chaotic, especially right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Freedom is inherently disorganized and a little bit on the chaotic side, and it's like, that's what we're here for.
You have to understand the trade-offs to what we're trying to do. Yep. Okay, well, let's look at this Latvian cyber crook
for some reason, when I'm blogging, you know, when you're blogging, I don't care what the topic is, but when you're blogging about stuff, you finally get to, you know, things you're going to leave out, things you're going to put in, and things that I leave out. I mean, I just don't do headline news breach of the day, because I don't care. I don't care who's breached. Everybody's breached. Sooner or later, you know, it's going to happen. And but when these characters, you know, get arrested, for some reason, that's interesting. I started reporting on arrests, and this guy's story is just incredible, because he and his wife partnered up they created a shell corporation in Florida, and they were allegedly placing advertising for a major hotel chain. And one of the newspapers that they chose to advertise in the online edition was the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And so they, you know, the Star Tribune at that time did its due diligence and checked their original ad for malware, placed the ad, and then this couple updated their ad with a ad that had malicious code embedded in it. And so when people would go to the Star Tribune website, any page that this was on, it would pop up a little pop-up that says your computer's infected. It would make your computer run slower and make it look like it was infected. And then there was a link, and for, you know, the low price of $49.95, you can download this miracle computer cleaner that will remove the bad stuff. Well, the whole thing was bad stuff that these two were put in, and the ad ran for I think about 2 days or maybe just slightly over 24 hours before the Star Tribune figured out what they were doing and pulled it. And in that time, they managed to rake in about $2 million, which is not a bad deal. Well, they found him and her in Latvia and tried to work an extradition deal with the Latvian police, and the Latvian police let him go, him and her go on their own recognizance while the extradition case was going through the courts, and he just took off. For some reason, she stayed put, but she was never extradited. And at this point, I can't even find out any information about her. But I think what she did is just rolled and told the story, and the Latvian police just said, "Okay, fine. You know, we're not gonna turn you over to the Americans." Well, the guy was found recently in Poland, and the Polish authorities were much more cooperative and have extradited him to the United States, and he's standing trial in Minneapolis for that crime. And I just think it shows that two things that I find interesting about this is that the bad guys can't hide forever. There have been other cyber criminals who have been picked up when they left Russia and went on vacation in Spain or the Maldives or some other place that has extradition. And then, so it's kind of like, you know, yeah, the return on investment for these guys is pretty good. These guys make a really good living in cybercrime, but there are trade-offs, and one of them is if you're located in Russia, you need to stay there. If you go outside of Russia and, you know, the Interpol or the FBI finds out, well, then they're going to pick you up, and they're going to pick you up that quick. And so, you know, that's I guess that's the story. That's the whole story. I think it's interesting that it has a Star Tribune tie-in. And at the time, I remember doing a lot of cleanup on systems where it's like, yeah, I was at the Star Tribune and all of a sudden my computer went weird, and it's like, yeah. So,
well,
you
that's
know,
what
it's
happened.
Sort of interesting.
Well, it's just interesting the different scams that they do. And you were talking about email, and email seems all boring, but there's a lot of problems that just generate from email. And there has been some really high profile people that have had email accounts hacked into, like the director, the CIA director, John Brennan, John Podesta's email, which triggered a lot of stuff going on during the campaign.
That all went up on WikiLeaks, I think, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it all went up on WikiLeaks, and it became part of that whole, you know, the whole pedophilia thing that they were going. He had some things in there that were kind of questionable. And I haven't really covered all that stuff, but I've heard some of the questionable things that has been in there. So what is going on in that whole realm? You wanted to talk a little bit about the nefarious activities that you've been observing.
Yeah, and this is kind of like, one of the most successful ways that criminals and other attackers could be nation states, law enforcement, what have you, is through email. And there's two main vehicles. Sometimes one leads to the other. The first one is, you know, the specifically targeted phishing email, where they send an email out to that seems very convincing and it has lots of personal data that you just wouldn't assume your average attacker would know. So it makes it look real realistic. Maybe it's coming, looks like it's coming from somebody you know. And then there's, you know, a link or an attachment. And lots of times the attachment will install some type of an exploit. Might be a keylogger, or it might be a remote access. It might be some type of recording software that just records not only what you're typing, but also takes screenshots of your screen and what have you. So this is a great way to maintain surveillance on a target, whether you're law enforcement or criminal, and learn a great deal. If you think about it, if I can get into your computer, or better yet, if I've tricked you into providing your user ID and password for your email account, I can log into your email account just like you do, read all your messages, read everything you've sent in the sent mail. I can look at your contact list and see who your contacts are. This gives me, you know, other people that I can expand my exploit to, or if I'm law enforcement, it all of a sudden gives me a bunch of people I can talk to when I get into the investigation stage of things. I can learn about things that you're planning, learn about travel you're going on. If I have established remote access to your computer, I can search the computer at will. I can search other networks it's connected to, online stores, whatever. I can find where your stuff is located. And so this is just a very, very dangerous para exploits, and it's used a lot by a lot of different people. I mean, it's not just criminals, although criminals certainly, you know, gain a foothold. There was a case where an Italian couple, this was on again a husband and wife team, and they were compromising email accounts of important Italian figures, and they were doing nothing. They were in these email accounts for as long as 10 years in some cases, and all they were doing was looking for information that would allow them to make a stock trade on that information that was more or less guaranteed to make the money. So it was an insider trading scam, but because they weren't really connected to any of these major, you know, economic events, they were just looked, you know, to the system, they just looked like people who were incredibly good at timing, you know, at picking a stock at the right moment and making it. And they only got pinched because of an email they sent to somebody who was extra vigilant and thought it seemed scammy and turned it over to the police. And as the police started unraveling this thing, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. But this couple had made several million dollars in stock transactions based on the information that they got out of these email accounts. And so, you know, the lesson here is that you need to be treating your email account with a great deal more respect when it comes to keeping your password, you know, making your password strong and keeping it secure.
Do you think of a lot of our email accounts are being hacked and we just don't realize we're being hacked?
Yes.
Being hacked and we don't know it?
Well, you know, let's say that I want your password to your Google account. So I'll send you an email that looks like it's from Google, and it'll say something like, log in here to get, free Google storage, or, you know, it's some kind of a compelling opportunity, or maybe some scary things happened. Like, geez, it looks like somebody's trying to hack your account. We want you to go in and change your secret, you know, to answer your secret questions. And so you click away on a link, looks like a Google login screen. You enter your Google username and password, and for some reason it mysteriously doesn't work. But what happens is that they bump you from the fake screen where they just harvested your credentials to the real screen, and then you'll log in and it'll work, and you'll go, oh, I must have mistyped something. And then you go in and you change your secret questions, but you don't change your password, and they've got your password and they can get in and then start watching your account. And this is why a lot of services like Facebook, and I think Google does this too, happened to me the other day. In fact, I was in Wisconsin and logged into a service, and I got an email right away that said, we've never seen you logging in from this IP address. Is this really you? And so when you get those kind of, you know, warnings, you need to be paying attention to them and not just saying, no, it was me. Because if you get one that says, somebody just logged into your email account in St. Petersburg, Russia, was it you? And you're not in St. Petersburg, well, you know, that might be a problem for you. In fact, it is. It's going to be a problem for you unless you take some immediate steps to.
Well, I like it when the banks. I like it when the banks now are verifying the actual computer. Like you have to set up a computer to be able to go into that bank account. Yep. I like that because now my bank accounts might be a little safer. I just had a situation where my credit card was taken, and this guy, he took about 8 different card numbers. They got them, which was really great. And I was working with the agent that was trying to take him down. And she just sent me an email that they got them. And I was I'm like, good job. But that's pretty rare, right? I mean, usually you don't get these characters. They're just selling numbers, right? They get our numbers from, Yahoo lost a couple hundred thousand of them or a couple hundred million of them.
Yeah.
And they buy all these numbers from everywhere. And then now your credit card is some guy has your number. And next thing you know, they're using even though you still have the credit card in your wallet.
Yeah, you buy stuff online and get it shipped somewhere else. And, hopefully, you may not notice until, I've got my Amazon account set up. So Amazon tells me every step of the deal, hey, we packed it. Hey, it's on the dock. Hey, I get like 12 emails when I buy something. Well, that's nice because not only do I know where my stuff is, but if all of a sudden I'm shipping something somewhere and it isn't me, I'm going to know that too. And, so setting those kind of things up is cool. I'm, of course, becoming a huge fan of two-factor authentication because you need a password and a little 6-digit code on your smartphone app. And even if somebody figures out your password or gets you to provide your password or buys it from a list online, like a Yahoo password, they still need your phone. And for most criminals, that's not going to be a possibility because they're not even geographically in the same country as you, much less, that they'd have your phone. But then, of course, if you walk into you go to the gym and you throw your purse in the trunk of the car, and then the purse has your credit cards and your phone, and you go in and some guy jacks, crowbars open your trunk and takes your, now that rule has been broken, but then you have to go through a whole lot of extra grief. So it's an interesting, I don't know if it's just worse or if it just seems worse, but an average person needs to be much more vigilant than I remember from the past. You need to be thinking about how could somebody use what I just did against me right now, And so,
Well, can we talk about some of the things? Just move my camera. Oopsie, let me start over. Can we talk about some of the things that you see in the movies? Is it possible to take over all the lighting, the stoplights at a in a city, for example, and really mess up?
Yeah, that should be technically feasible. It really sort of depends. Some systems, like the electrical grid, are not necessarily internet connected. They use a private network. They'll use a private line network that they buy from a telecommunications company like AT&T or Verizon or CenturyLink or whatever, and they'll put together a network that connects everything up, but is not connected to the greater internet. Those types of networks are a lot harder to breach because you need to be on their network in order to get that to work. And it's not enough for you to send an email. You need to be able to physically find a connection point to do that. Some TV shows are very, very accurate in their portrayal. Like all the hacks in Mr. Robot are authentic hacks. everything you see them doing there is the real deal. They've gone to great lengths and hired some incredible talent just to vet the activity that's going on in that show. Some of the things that you see, like in Live Free and Die Hard, which might be the best Die Hard movie ever, but I may feel that way just because it's all sort of surrounds this poor hacker and who's trying who they're trying to kill. A lot of that stuff, if it's not real, it's kind of based on reality. The convenient USB ports that I plug my keyboard into everywhere, that doesn't really exist in too many places. And in really high security facilities, in a lot of cases, they've either disabled the USB connectors or they just don't exist. Because USB, as a, the USB flash drives are the number one way that data leaves a building and can be the best way to get an exploit into a building that isn't otherwise connected to the network or to the internet, rather.
Well, how about like satellite? Is it possible to hack into a satellite and take over the drones or something like that?
The answer is maybe. It would really depend. It all requires that you're able to access the network, the control network for these devices, and that's not necessarily going to be an easy thing to do. But let's take a look at drones, because drones, we're using drones in a military capacity quite a bit, and now Amazon is seriously talking about drone delivery, and in fact, they recently filed a patent for a large warehouse that is a multi-floor, that's a tall vertical building in a city center that would be not only a warehouse and distribution center, but would be like a place where the drones would come and go from. Well, now we've got all these drones zipping about. How do we keep them from knocking into each other? Just as a casual, but they make these interesting little EMP gun, electromagnetic pulse guns, where you can basically point it at a drone and confuse it so it falls out of the sky. Well, okay, so Amazon's delivering something and some guy, now all of a sudden we're hijacking packages and sort of finding out, seeing if we got lucky. It's like robbing the stagecoach, right? Back in the cowboy, in a cowboy movie. It's like, what do you got on this coach? And it's like, not much really. And it's kind of like, oh, dang, we were hoping there'd be a box of gold.
It's like a box of chocolates.
Yeah, exactly. You shoot this stuff out of the sky and
you foresee like, these things being hijacked all over the place, Amazon? I mean, they're going to have to come up with a method.
They're going to have to come up with a secure and encrypted way of controlling these devices that can't be hacked by somebody with good electronics. Now, if anybody's going to do it correctly, it'll be Amazon. But there'll be some other chuckle-headed outfit that's going to do it on the cheap and is going to not worry about security because they want to, they want to be, in order to compete with Amazon, the only thing you can really do is be less expensive. So that means you've got to,
When I trim. I think what people are worried about with all these drones flying around is spying, like Amazon doing some kind of partnership with the government. And next thing you know, it's another surveillance network through Amazon's drones, which I wouldn't put it past them.
And if there's dozens of drones zipping around in the sky and it becomes a normal part of the landscape, some guy can launch a weaponized drone and it won't even stand out until, it's too late, and it's kind of like, but then, in the early days of air travel, well, in the early days, let's just say the early days of flight, you know, any flat grassy field was an airport, and you didn't report your flight plan to anybody. And, you know, things happened like that B-17 bomber that was flying either to or back from Europe or whatever and crashed into the Empire State Building during World War II. I mean, you know, it's kind of like it was foggy. They're flying by sight and got in the wrong place. Well, all that's regulated now, and even private planes have to follow a certain set of rules so those rules will have to be put in place for drone traffic.
I think this is an example of where our social institutions, we're changing so fast that we're behind. We don't have, behind. It's just our social institutions are not up to date yet. They haven't kept up with our changes. And so there's going to be a lot of chaos and a lot of things going on as things progress. But, you know, as we both know, when you're putting rules in place and you're putting structure in place to something that had no structure, we just want to make sure it gets put in place in a way that maintains our freedoms and doesn't get out of control.
Yeah. And you know, there are people who aren't too happy when drones are in their vicinity. They do make a noise. You know, they make a noise. They're trying to make, you know, drone propellers that don't give off quite as much sound. But, you know, unfortunately, what causes the noise also provides lift for the device. So there's only so far you can get in that area.
But there's also a positive, right?
And then there's the you know, what happens if, you know, so I've got 8 little propellers spinning around. What happens if one of them gets conked out, you know?
What happens to the maintenance? The true.
Yeah. What happens? They're dropping out of the sky, or some poor little sparrow decides to fly into one of these things. I mean, you know, what are you going to do about the
inevitable accidents?
Well,
that's part of the whole industry developing. We're going to like it though, in the sense that we order something and that day we get it. I mean,
yeah, it's going to fly right out to you.
Yeah, we can't complain too much because it's gonna be amazing when you. But that's the whole freedom concept of, you know, we just have to, it's an interesting time. I think there's a lot of excitement and we're going through such an amazing time, but at the same time, we have to be careful what we do with all these, you know, there's always a light and a dark side to everything that.
Yep.
But.
Well, what, you know, one of the issues that I keep reading about, and I'm sort of marginally interested in is robotics and artificial intelligence. And it's kind of like when the robots have all of our jobs, what are we going to do with ourselves? You know, and more importantly, how are we going to get fed and housed? And
people are starting to really talk about the ethics of this whole situation.
Yeah,
what are we going to do when we don't really have jobs for people? And people, there'll always be jobs. I always think, I don't know if I believe that. I think we're really going to have to think through some of these things. It's already affecting us. I think that's a big chunk of what our unemployment is. Our unemployment rate's not accurate, what the government publishes. Yeah. And so
no.
I think we
No, have, because if you quit looking, you're no longer unemployed. You're uninterested.
Yeah, I think the unemployment rate's in the mid-20s, something like that.
Sure.
According to Shadow Stats and other places, it's pretty high. And a big percentage of that is our automation and our manufacturing and the fact that we're shipping all our jobs to other countries where it's a lot cheaper. But we can't underestimate the fact that we're just automating jobs. And that's a long-term trend.
Yeah, if we get to the point where we've automated dang near everything, and that's probably not, I mean, the capability is not that far off. Well, then it's a question of what about money? What do people do to make money? Are we going to even need money? Or are we going to completely change our society to, okay, so these machines are working and creating value. They don't have to be fed. We don't have to pay them. We don't have to house them. We don't have to commute them. They just stay at the factory or wherever they are. So maybe this wealth that's being created by machines just simply gets shared.
Yeah, we're going to have to rethink. This is another example of how our social institutions not keeping up with our technology.
Yeah.
And if we're smart, we could all be able to do more creative activities, do more what we want. Mm-hmm. Everybody could eat and take care of themselves. Yep. If we're not smart, all this money could go to the wealthy and we could have a really
There's the us and them.
Separated.
You know.
So let's hopefully we're smart enough.
Or there's the wealthy who own the robots, and then there's everybody else who's living on basically some kind of welfare. You know, the government passes out some sort of amount of money that's good enough to live on, and, you know, but it's not going to be house in the suburbs, cabin in the woods, three ATVs, four snowmobiles, and a boat. It's going to be, you know... Boy, I sure hope that next check comes because we just ate the last Cheerio, you know. I mean,
and you get your little box that you can sleep in, and
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's a realistic.
We'll all be living in you know, little high rise apartment buildings that built by robots that, you know, you won't need a lot of space because you won't own anything.
Oh, that's, yes, there could be, well, let's hope it goes in a better direction than that. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. We can have you back and we can talk about what the future is going to look like with everything being automated. We need to think about that and the ethics behind that.
Yeah, there's some interesting books I've read on that subject, and you know, so artificial intelligence inevitably will lead to robotic devices that become self-aware. What if they want to be treated like a living thing?
Well, how do you know when they're going to be self-aware? How do you know they're going to be self-aware in the same sense that we are?
Yeah,
and that's a good discussion. I'm not there yet, unless we start getting into biological machines, where it's then maybe. I'm just not there yet with just silicon electric machine, you know, electron. It has to, like, change to, like, biology or something. In my mind.
Yeah. Well, when the robots all go out on strike and nothing's getting made anymore, that'll be an interesting day, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining. Have a wonderful 4th of July. And so thank you. And wait, before we leave, how can people find more about you?
You can always find me on my blog, Wise Guys Cybersecurity. Its spelling's a little different. It's WYZGUIS. I'm Googleable.
And I'll have it up here on the screen, on the video as well. And I'll have it on the radio page on my website so people will be able to find it. Yep. So great. Thank you.
Yep. Take care, Sarah.
Okay, let's stop this.
That's all we have for today, folks. If you want to hear the interview again, go to my website, sarahwestall.com. Also, all of my shows are up there. And I also want to encourage you to support the show on Patreon. Even just $1 a month would really help. You'd get my two ebooks for free. And at $2 a month, you're going to get my next ebook that I'm working very hard on for free as well. So hopefully you can support the show. And once I get enough, I'm going to call them subscribers or really patrons. Once I get enough of that, then I'm going to start creating some exclusive content and hopefully maybe turn it into something meaningful from a subscriber standpoint. I hope you all had an amazing 4th of July and have an amazing rest of the week.